Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here. It's also a great pleasure to speak after Damien and Jennifer because they've raised a number of issues that I'm also going to discuss today. So again, billing for vaccination in schools, experience from a school-based Tdap vaccination clinic. We have no disclosures to make. I'd like to start with an acknowledgement slide because this really was a collaborative effort among a number of individuals and a number of institutions listed here, including Denver Public Health, Denver Public Schools, Denver Health and Hospitals. So, as the audience is well aware, there are several new vaccines recently licensed that are targeted for adolescents. These include Tdap, meningococcal, and HPV vaccine. In addition, influenza vaccine is now routinely recommended for all adolescents. Through the expansion of opportunities for adolescents has come also attention to trying to coordinate delivery of vaccines to adolescents with the delivery of preventive care. And this concept has been called the adolescent immunization platform. However, there are a number of recognized barriers to reaching this platform. Adolescents make infrequent visits to primary care settings. When adolescents are seen, it's often for acute care. And some adolescents lack insurance or they lack a medical home. So while there's extensive efforts at maximizing the adolescent immunization platform, there's also been some real attention at looking at other settings for vaccination. So what about vaccination in schools? Well, as we know and as we've heard about from Damien, there's extensive school-based vaccination programs elsewhere, including in Australia. Also, the U.S. had extensive school vaccination programs, for example, polio vaccination during the 1960s. There are some more current U.S. examples, but these have primarily been around influenza vaccination, and the vaccine has been donated. And as you can see, this model is unlikely to be sustainable long-term because once the donated vaccine goes away, the program goes away. There are some additional considerations around school vaccination I'd like to highlight. In general, this is viewed fairly favorably by parents. Schools are already involved in immunizations through their tracking and enforcing of school immunization mandates. And generally, this idea is supported by physicians, but physicians have also expressed a number of concerns. Physicians have been concerned that they could lose the hook that immunizations represents for bringing adolescents into the clinic for well adolescent visits, and it also could lead to scattered immunization records. These are also issues that Jennifer highlighted in her talk. There are some additional challenges with school-based delivery. There's really no immunization delivery infrastructure in schools. There's really no billing infrastructure in schools. Additionally, FERPA regulations, which regulate disclosure of student information outside of the school, really limit information disclosure to third parties, such as somebody interested in running a vaccination clinic. So in this context, we conducted the following study. We sought to assess the feasibility of a school-based vaccination program which is open to all students, regardless of insurance status, which is capable of billing insurance companies, and which bills for both vaccine costs and administration fees. We also sought to assess vaccination and billing outcomes of this program. So next, I'll outline some study methods. The study was conducted in an urban public school district. The time period was April 2009. That's when the vaccination clinic was held. The targeted school was a large, socioeconomically diverse middle school with 909 students enrolled, 67% of whom were eligible for the federal free and reduced lunch program. And this particular clinic focused exclusively on Tdap vaccination, which is required for school entry, although it's important to keep in mind that this mandate was not being aggressively enforced. So initially, we held planning meetings with the school district. This included meeting with school district research committees, meeting with district administration, and also meeting with district nursing services. The school district in general was supportive, but expressed a number of concerns. They were concerned about the burden on school personnel, also concerned about the issues around student confidentiality raised and stipulated by FERPA. And the school district was also concerned about whether parents would receive a bill for denied claims. It was very important to the school district that parents perceive education as free and fair, and there were concerns that if parents received a bill from a service provided at school, this would be perceived negatively by parents. To prepare for the clinic, school nurses determined which students needed TDAP based on school paper and electronic records. Parents of students without documentation of TDAP were mailed consent forms from school, and those were mailed twice. Health insurance information, health information, and billing information was requested on the consent form itself. And then once parents consented to participate, then the community vaccinator could contact them and confirm their insurance status. And this was important with respect to FERPA regulations. In terms of running the clinic, a local community vaccinator conducted the clinic on school grounds. It was staffed by nurses and other personnel. Students were recalled by grade to the clinic, and they were out of class for roughly 20 to 45 minutes. After the clinic, immunization data was entered into a local immunization registry, which then downloaded to a state immunization registry, to the Colorado State Registry. In terms of the billing processes for the clinic, the community vaccinator managed the billing. They examined existing contracts. However, it's important to note that attempts to expand existing contracts were limited due to time constraints of when we conducted the clinic, and we're going to come back to this point. The bills were resubmitted multiple times if necessary, reasons for denial were captured, and importantly, as I mentioned, parents were not billed if claims were denied. So this is just a schematic overview of how billing went in terms of billing by various insurance categories. It's important to keep in mind that for privately insured students, the community vaccinator paid for vaccine and then charged the insurance company for that vaccine. So for private, they billed for vaccine costs and a vaccine administration fee. For students with the state child health insurance plan, the community vaccinator billed for vaccine costs and the administration fee. However, if you have Medicaid, your vaccine is provided free of charge to the vaccinator by the VFC program, so the vaccine costs were not charged, but there was an administration fee charged to Medicaid. If you're uninsured, then there's nobody to bill. And so the vaccine's provided through the VFC program and no administration fee is billed. Our analytic methods, we looked at descriptive frequencies of the consent and immunization outcomes, and then we estimated costs using a micro-costing approach. Collected time and cost data on every immunization-related activity, including immunization-related supplies and billing, and we analyzed costs for each participating entity. So moving on to results, the total school enrollment was 909 students. 46% had documentation of prior TDAP at school. That documentation was available at school. 54% had no documentation of TDAP vaccination at school, meaning the documentation wasn't there at the school. And then among those with no documented TDAP, 2% returned a consent, but we later learned they had TDAP vaccination. 7% returned a vaccine record, not a consent, and the vaccine record stated that they'd had TDAP in the past. 60% of these students returned no consent and also didn't return a vaccination record. And then 32% consented for vaccination at school. So looking at immunization outcomes, the TDAP vaccination clinic lasted 2.5 hours. 151 of 155 eligible consented students were vaccinated. 4 were not vaccinated either because they were absent or had a contraindication. In addition, 6 students were over-immunized, meaning that they received TDAP at the clinic, but later records showed that they'd had TDAP prior to the clinic. Overall, the program increased school-wide TDAP immunization rates from 46% to 67%. This is the insurance status of the students who were vaccinated at the clinic. 40% were uninsured, 30% had private health insurance, 25% had Medicaid insurance, 5% had SCHIP insurance. So equivalent numbers had private insurance as had government public insurance. So the next 3 or 4 slides, we're going to look at vaccine costs and reimbursement by insurance category. So for those with private insurance, there are 45 students. The cost of the vaccine was $35.31, and so the total cost of the program was roughly $1,589. For SCHIP, 8 students, same cost. For Medicaid, as I noted, and for uninsured, there was no cost to the community vaccinator for a vaccine because it was provided through VFC. In terms of costs to administer the clinic, again, we measured these in detail. The community vaccinator, there's a series of activities that happen pre-clinic. These included compiling, sending, and reviewing consents. There was costs of doing a mailing or two mailings, and then there were day of clinic costs. The billing department also had to register patients and bill and follow up with denied claims. And then the school had a series of activities pre-clinic and on the day of clinic. Additionally, the school took this as an opportunity to update immunization information for the entire school body. And we have struggled with the question of whether that school time spent updating immunization records is a cost that we should consider when administering the clinic, because from our perspective, or from the community vaccinator's perspective, this is something that the school would perhaps need to do regardless of whether we were doing the vaccination clinic at all. From the standpoint of the school nurse has a lot of other activities on her plate, and she felt like she hadn't had the opportunity to do this yet, but now that we were doing the clinic, she was going to go through all 909 records. So in fact, in the results I'm going to present, we just consider the first three costs as costs to run the clinic, and administrative cost per student immunized, if you include these three categories, was $34.55 per student immunized. Prior studies had shown a vaccine administration cost roughly $7 to $11 per student immunized, but those were in private practices. So looking at reimbursement for vaccine costs, these were billed at $36.25 a dose. As you can see, 23 of the students who had private health insurance had reimbursement. 22 had no reimbursement for the vaccine costs. All students who with SCHIP insurance, the program was reimbursed for the vaccine costs, and again, not applicable for Medicaid or uninsured. There was also an administration fee that was billed. That was billed at $7 per dose. Again, that's separate from actually the vaccine costs. And as you can see, for privately insured students, 13 had at least some reimbursement for the vaccine administration fee, where 32 students did not. For SCHIP, 5 had some reimbursement, 3 did not. For Medicaid, actually, 33 of those students had some vaccine administration fee reimbursed. So this is a summary of all of the costs and all the reimbursements for this clinic. This first column is total costs, and the vaccine costs are in there with the administration costs. Again, except for Medicaid and uninsured, there wasn't a cost to the community vaccinator because the vaccine was provided through VFC. And as you can see, the farthest column is dollars reimbursed, 28% for privately insured, 58% for SCHIP, 18% for Medicaid, and then 0% for uninsured because there was no billing done for them. And overall, 20% of the costs of the clinic were reimbursed. This slide shows a number of reasons for denied claims. It was either due to what's called patient responsibility or due to some contractual obligation. In terms of patient responsibility, for example, 6 of these denials were because the insurer said this was actually a deductible that the family had to pay out of pocket, and then other reasons listed. And then there was no response from the insurer for 7 students. Moving on to the limitations of this study, I think it's important to interpret everything that I've presented so far in the context of several important limitations. This was a pilot study. It was conducted in one school with one vaccine. There was no comparison school. However, for the 2009-2010 school year, we're conducting a very similar program, but with 7 schools, all vaccines are being offered, and then we have a group of 8 comparison schools that we'll look at immunization rates in as well. We also don't know why some parents didn't consent to participate. Were their students actually up to date with Tdap, and that's why they didn't participate? Were they worried about a cost that would come to them, or did they just prefer vaccination with their PCP? It's also important to note that these findings may not be generalizable to other regions. There's some additional limitations. As I mentioned, there was limited time prior to the clinic to examine and renegotiate contracts with private insurers. The administrative cost estimates are sensitive to model assumptions, for example, whether you include the cost to update records. And it didn't include parental lost time from work as a potential cost savings of the project. So in conclusion, school Tdap vaccination clinics significantly increased school-wide vaccination rates in this pilot. Students of all insurance types participated. However, denied claims were relatively common, both for vaccine costs and for administration fees. And in this pilot, we found that there were high administrative costs for conducting a school-based clinic, and this is compared to estimates from private practices. So what are the implications of this? We feel that as a pilot study, it demonstrated some degree of feasibility because 151 students were successfully vaccinated and immunization rates were significantly improved. However, I'm not sure that this pilot really demonstrated financial sustainability. And I think it gives you a hint about what you'd need to have for long-term sustainability. You'd need to really increase the efficiency and the cost efficiency of the program, and you'd need to work hard to reduce those denials. So to improve the efficiency, perhaps no mailings because there was a cost associated with those, streamline the consent process, and improve documentation of school vaccination records. To decrease denials, clearly there needs to be some building of relationships and revising of contracts with the insurers. However, interpretation of everything that I presented today, it's important to think about what your perspective is, because you're going to interpret these findings different based on your perspective. If you're the community vaccinator, I think they felt like they were doing a good, important service for the community, but they're going to be motivated to try to limit their financial loss, clearly. If you're looking at it from the school perspective, for them, their educational mission is paramount. And so they're still going to ask, really, what was the burden of this to the school district? And then, again, I think we need to think about this from the broadest perspective, which is really the societal perspective. Is this an opportunity to reduce disparities? As we saw, 40% of the participants were uninsured students. And does this represent an opportunity for disease prevention if we're effectively increasing immunization rates? So all important questions, and we'll just ask you to stay tuned so that we can maybe present expanded data next year. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Matt, and to all of you. I'd like to open it up now for questions. If you could just step to the microphone to ask you and identify yourself, please.
Should I start? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you all to all the presenters. I have a comment and a question for Matt. First of all, I was struck by the high number of uninsured kids in this pilot. It seems like that's where a lot of the cost was. Because it wasn't being reimbursed at all. But I had a question in terms of the commercial vaccinator. Did the commercial vaccinator have a contract with the different insurers that covered those insured kids, the ones with private insurance?
So the community vaccinator did have insurance contracts with all of the major insurance players in Colorado. The problem was that those contracts were not specifically designed to facilitate school-based vaccination. So often there was nothing in the contract that said anything about, okay, school vaccination is okay. And in fact, there may have been barriers to that. It might say, we'll pay for vaccination, but only if it happens at the PCP's office. So there were contracts, but those contracts didn't necessarily meet the need of the situation.
Can I ask, what kind of community vaccinator was it? Was it a commercial vaccinator or VNA or?
So the community vaccinator was through Denver Health, which is sort of a unique organization because it's also a combination of Denver Public Health as well as the Safety Net Clinic for the City and County of Denver. And then they have a community health services branch that was the community vaccinator. So it was an organization that had longstanding relationships with sort of all of the folks.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Carrie Mojan-Wallin, and I'm actually an immunization coordinator for a large private clinic. And my question is for Jennifer, was there any distinction in your study between when you say a school-based event, if those were all during the school day, or if those included events that were more community-based or after school hours?
The studies that were included in our body of evidence all looked at vaccination programs during the actual school hours. So we didn't have any after school clinics or any other community clinics.
Do you know if there's any information out there or studies that have been done comparing school-based clinics that are held during the school day versus those that are after? Because in our community where we did do this activity, and actually the private clinics were the immunizers within the clinics, the schools really pushed for after hours because of the hassle of consent forms and getting those back. And they felt that was the biggest barrier for the schools not participating because of all of the clerical work associated with collecting those consents. But our argument was, we felt that the people that would come to an after-hours clinic are the same people that are going to come to our offices and bring their kids in, and that we didn't really feel like it was adding a benefit to our community doing it after hours. But they were pretty insistent that that was the way that they wanted to go. And, oh, the, you know, I think that's what they'll want, because they'll want to be there with their kids. And I'm like, but those are the kids that we're already seeing. What about the ones we're not seeing? So do you have any words of wisdom there?
With our body of evidence or the studies that we reviewed before we included or excluded them, we didn't come across any, but I can look some up and get back in contact with you.
Hi, I'm Charlene Wong with CDC Division of Cancer as well as Emory University School of Medicine. And Jennifer, I had another question for you. Were you guys able to distinguish between childhood vaccines and adolescent vaccinations when you were looking at the effect of school-based programs?
We did, actually, we didn't make any recommendations based upon the different types of vaccines. We included, for schools, they did consist of adolescent immunizations and then the childhood series, and then for childcare, it was specifically, you know, childhood vaccines. We looked at it, but we didn't make any differential findings.
Okay, so no specific recommendations for adolescent vaccinations versus childhood.
Right, okay. Right, we didn't make any.
Sorry, I have one more question, thank you, for Damien. Thank you for coming all this way. So I just wanted to ask you about moving forward into your flu season now. Are you using a trivalent influenza vaccine that includes the 2009 H1N1?
Look, we are, but the recommendations and the funding for influenza vaccination is quite different in Australia to the US. The publicly funded trivalent influenza vaccine is only available for individuals over 65 or for individuals with chronic health conditions. So we've been quite heavily, alternatively, a lot of employers choose to purchase the vaccine in the private market for their staff. But the general population isn't able to just walk in and receive a funded dose. So it's been a difficult message to try and get across that we want to see all those people who aren't otherwise going to reasonably expect to get the flu vaccine to get the H1N1, because that is available free to anyone. And in fact, we may actually be having a rather large fire sale in the near future because we've got lots left over.
Thank you.
I'm Paul Hunter from Milwaukee. I'm a family physician, just started with the health department in August. City of Milwaukee Health Department. I have a question about local health departments doing the school-based clinics. Really two fairly different questions. One is, in Australia, in Queensland, it seemed like you had a fairly easy way to approach the schools, if I understood it correctly, because you were all sort of on the same side, the health department was on the same side as the schools, or am I not understanding that correctly?
Generally speaking, yes, but I must say that school principals do ran the schools, I guess, a little bit like their own small fiefdoms. So whilst at a department level, we had Education Queensland, which is the structure in Australia is a little bit different. Our local governments really look after local infrastructure, parks, gardens, roads, and community recreational infrastructure in a lot of ways. So the schools and the like are very much run by the state government, and so is the health department. So departmentally, we had them on side. And we have, while we only introduced the program in 2007, we have had ad hoc programs in the past. So we have had this ongoing relationship when we first introduced meningococcal C in 2003. And prior to that in 1997 with the change from the second dose of MMR from 15 down to 4 years of age, we ran large-scale programs in schools then. So we do have this quite good working history with schools, but as I said, there have always been, and I think there will always continue to be, schools who just go, this is not our problem, we are here to teach, and that's it. So it's not all smooth sailing, but most schools are pretty good about it.
Because I'm thinking of the experience that I've heard about in Milwaukee, and I think it would be throughout most of the country, is that we have the state requirements, school requirements for immunizations in order to progress through school, and that are enforced in various degrees depending on the situation in the community. And operationally put into effect by school principals variously in various local schools. And in Milwaukee, just to put in a plug for the people I work with who did a poster, there's an innovative coordination between the county district attorney and the immunization program, where they work together to try to increase the immunization rates in the schools. And that leads into my second question, which is another thing we're working on is a quality improvement project on school-based clinics that are done by, the actual immunizations are given by or will be given by the public health nurses in the local health department. And I was surprised how few, in your review of the literature, that how few of those set sites were actually done, it looked like, by public health nurses from the local health departments. Was I interpreting that correctly on your charts when you reviewed the literature, Jennifer?
The last part of that question again, please.
So it looked like when you reviewed the literature, mm-hmm. there was a column for local health department as being the provider of the vaccinations, mm-hmm. and there were only two or three out of the 10 or so studies that actually had the local health department providing the immunizations. Is that correct?
Right. So most commonly, especially with the schools, the local health department did come in and provide the vaccinations in addition to some other services, say like volunteer nursing students or some of the contracted nursing agencies. But it was mostly local health departments that contracted with the schools.
But I don't know.
Maybe I missed your question.
Well, I mean, maybe I didn't understand your slide then, because it looked like maybe somebody else can correct me here, but on your slide there was a column that had local health department with two or three check marks as being the provider of the vaccines, and then there were two or three other columns that had the provider that were not local health departments.
To my understanding, yes, the local health department, they did provide, they were the ones that were actually vaccinating the students.
Okay, then I'll look at the slides later and try to figure it out later.
Okay, I can.